consciousness. So this is five aggregates. So is it affected by clinging? Clinging. These bhikkhus are the five aggregates affected by clinging. That is the material form aggregates affected by clinging, and then followed by, he said, the perceptions, you know, affected by clinging, feelings, perception, mental formations, and the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging, saying, good Rinpoche, the bhikkhu delighted and rejoiced in the blessed one's words. Then he asked him further questions, but Rinpoche, in what are these five aggregates affected by clinging rooted? So he said, these five aggregates that affected by clinging, what is the cause? What is the root? What is the source, you know, that affected by clinging, what is the root? So then the Buddha's answered, these five aggregates affected by clinging are rooted in desires. The desire is the want, who is the one that is the cause, the rooted that comes from the desires, the wanting. So the desires, sensual desires, like lust, sexual desires. But here is much more on a subtle level, the craving to be and craving not to be. You know, we want to be exist on a very subtle level. It's not that sometimes people think, oh, I have no craving. Doesn't mean that, you know, you don't crave for food, you have no lust. That means you have no craving. So it's referred to a very subtle level of craving. You know, that craving to be, we want to be exist. That craving is a subtle level. So Rinpoche, is that clinging the same as these five aggregates affected by clinging, or is the clinging something apart from the five aggregates affected by clinging? So here, the translations, when they said clinging, actually it's the upadana, it's not really that kind of you holding on, you're clinging. It's much more like we giving fuel to it, you know, like we our desires, you know, and we keep reacting to that, we are acting fuel. So that's why, you know, we keep coming back in the samsara, because you have the fuel. You know, this thing will grow, will keep going, the fire will keep burning. It will non stop, isn't it, if you keep. So it's not so much like really like you cling on it, you know, but because it's much more like a better word, I think, for this is like a fuel for that, you know. You're giving nutrients and things will grow, isn't it? If you starve it, it will not grow. So if you keep fueling, the fire will keep burning. So the vampires, so I finish this. So bhikkhu, that cleaning is neither the same as these five aggregates affected by cleaning, nor this cleaning, maybe we can say, is fuel, something apart from the five aggregates affected by cleaning. It is just its desires, and last in regards to the five aggregates affected by cleaning, there is cleaning here. So this is the what is meant, this clinging, is that the fuel that keep these five aggregates going. It's the fuel, you know, because when we keep, you know, we keep reacting to that, you know, we feeding it, so we keep putting in fuel, it will keep going. We keep these five aggregates going. And actually these five aggregates is not that something they are apart, you can take it apart, because now the Buddha put it like he take it apart, you know, doesn't mean that you can have it standing by itself, you know. The aggregates are one dependence on another. So you have to have this in order to have that. You have to have the body, you have to have the rupa, you have to have the body, then you have the sixth sense base, you have your sense base, you know, and then you have to have the contact. Then only you give rise to feelings. And without this, you can't have this. And then with the feelings, you give rise to perception, then the mental formation, that is the mental formation is the doer, is the will, is the thoughts about it, you know, that leading that. And then consciousness is the knower that you're conscious about. So that's why you can't say that I have only consciousness, you know, because the consciousness have to be a conscious of something. So you have is you can't really, you know, because it's when he explained like that, you know, you put it apart. It's just a car. You can't pull all the car apart. You say okay, you know, only the tires. You say is the car, you know. So, but they all this, you know, is have that they all interdependent on each other. Because of this, you have to this, you know, is linked together. But Venerable Sir, can there be diversity in the desires and lusts regarding these five aggregates affected by clinging? There can be, Bhikkhu, the Blessed One said. Here, Bhikkhu, someone think thus. May my material form be thus in the future. May my feelings be thus in the future. May my perception be thus in the future. May my mental formations be thus in the future. May my consciousness be thus in the future. Thus, there is diversity in the desires and lusts regarding these five aggregates affected by clinging. So that this being, you know, so that's why we are not being in the present moment, because sometimes that this is how, like, despite we whatever we experience, you know, that we try to control, but we have no control over. We try to manufacture, we try to create that, you know, may I feel this in the future. We try to measure, we try to control, but we can't, you know, because things just arises. And that is when you have the sense base, so when there's a context, feeling arises, either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings, and then this is how our perceptions that we perceive, but we don't perceive things as they truly is. We don't perceive that things as they truly are, because we are perverted by our likes and dislikes, like the feelings that we don't like. You know, immediately we have that, you know, I don't like it, you know. And then we think about it, and we think of how to avoid in the future, isn't it? And in the future, not to have the feelings, you know. This is how we, it's all our own manifestation. We manifest that, you know, through our own, the perception. Because the perception cannot be trusted, because of, we still have, the five interests is still there. So we don't see them as they truly are. That's why it cannot be trusted. Of course, the perception can be trusted when the five entrances is not there. But the five entrances is there. So that's why whatever we perceive, actually we are not perceiving things as they truly are. So that's why we try to manipulate, we try to manufacture, we manifest, you know, we just we do all sorts of things that, you know, hope that, you know, to avoid unpleasant feelings, and try to hold on to things that we like, the pleasant feelings, and then we try to create that. But we can't, isn't it? Actually, we have no control over. So we go, and so we go further to this. But remember, sir, in what way does the terms aggregate apply to the aggregates? So actually it means that it's accumulations of things. And the Buddha said how things accumulated into each other of these aggregates. They all accumulated into each aggregate. Like, you know, like perceptions, you know, how we perceive things, because of according to our likes and dislikes, and whole of this, all each aggregate is the loss of all, is all this accumulation, and the mental formations, the will, you know, we try to control, and the consciousness, the knower, you know, and also we try to control our body, you know. So may we always have a pleasant feelings, you know, I have no suffering, no sickness, no illness, you know. And actually we have no control over. So and all this is all, each aggregate also is with all this accumulation in each of these aggregates. Because any kind of material form, whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. This is the material form aggregates any kind of feelings, whatever, far or near. This is the feelings aggregate any kind of perception, whatever, far or near. This is the perception aggregates any kind of mental formations, whatever, far or near. This is the formation aggregate any kind of consciousness, whatever, far or near. And this is the consciousness aggregate. Is it in this way, because that the term aggregate applies to the aggregates? So this, as I mentioned just now, that is one dependent on another. So that's like for example, even an anagami, they still have a subtle conceit. You know, the sense of self is still there. So that's why the consciousness, you still have to have a conscious of something. You know, even though that he's no longer having ill will, you know, no longer having the personality attached to personality views, you know, but he still has the subtle, because that's why he's still not enlightened, because there is still a tiny bit of view is still there. The view of that wanting to exist, that conceit, the mana is still a little bit is there. That's why the conscious, you still have something to conscious about. That's why you cannot have this consciousness. Because, for example, when we have contact, you know, for example, when we have contact, and then feelings arises, that's why you have to have the sense base, you have to have the object. Then once there is a context, then the consciousness arises, isn't it? Without that, consciousness will not arise. So it will not be there. For example, if I'm sitting here, I don't see any one of you, you don't exist, the consciousness that is not there. So that's why sometimes is that this is one, you know, that they are interdependence on each other, so that the whole group of these aggregates, you know. The Buddhas, when he gave the teaching, he separate that. But actually, they are together. They are one affecting the other. One interdependent on others. We cannot really separate that. And this is how that one becomes the cause and condition for this. This becomes the cause and condition for this. And this is how it's begun. And this is the giving fuel. So that's why we keep going. So then his father, he asked, what is the cause and condition, remember, sir, for the manifestations of the material form aggregate? What is the cause and condition for the manifestation of feelings aggregate, perception aggregate, the mental formation aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate? So he asked, what is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the four aggregates? So the Buddha said, four great elements. So the body is made up of four elements. So the cause and condition for the body is the four elements. What are the four elements? That is a fire, water, earth, and earth, fire, water, earth, and heat. No, fire is the heat and cold. Earth and a water, wind. So they call it wind, fire, earth, and water. So this is the four elements. So when we die, isn't it, we all go back to the dirt, isn't it? It's all gone, the four elements. So with that element that is made up of that is the four elements is the cause and conditions for the material form of a body, the rupa. So that four great elements, because are the cause and conditions for the manifestation of material form aggregates. Contact is a cause and condition for the manifestation of feelings aggregate. Because of you have the form, you have the body, and then you have our eyes, sense base, you have our ear, sense base, you have a smell, you know, and touch, you know, we have all these senses, and then there is contact. So, feelings arises. So contact is a causes and condition for feelings, aggregates. So then feelings arises. Without the contact, feelings will not arise. So that's like the contact itself. So is the is the cause and condition for the manifestations of the feelings aggregate. So contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the perceptions aggregate. Because of the, it's also, yeah, contact is also the cause and the contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of perception aggregate. Contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of mental formations aggregate. Because with the context, this is how it arise, is arise feelings, then go to the mental, go to perceptions and mental formation. So context is the cause and condition for the feelings aggregates, the perception aggregates, the mental formation aggregates, and the consciousness aggregates. Not consciousness, sorry, it's yes. It's not the consciousness, it's the four aggregates that is feelings, perception, mental formation. Then he said the mentality and materiality is a cause and conditions for the manifestation of consciousness aggregate. That is a nama rupa. That is the body, the form, and the feeling, perceptions, mental formations. Then all of these, four, these all four aggregates is the causes and the cause and condition for the consciousness aggregate. That's right. When all this ceases, the consciousness ceases. So if you are no longer having the body, if you have no contacts, you have no, you know, more feel, you have no, all this aggregate is not there. So because the consciousness has no, not, nothing to be conscious of. So then when all this cease, all the four aggregates cease, consciousness cease. So when Buster, how does identity views come to be? Here, and I'm taught, and this we talk identity view, some the translate as personality view. So this is how yesterday, Friday I had the talks of that, about that, how we identify ourselves, how we identify all the experience, all the feelings, you know, as this is me, this is mine, this is where the personality view, the identity view is comes into. And they say sometimes when we talk about non-self, and we are, it's not saying that you are not there, you are not, you don't have that feelings, it's not everything empty, emptiness, it's that because all these that they don't stay, they come and go, but we identify this as me, like this belong, as if that we own those feelings, we own those emotion, this experience, we think that we own them. So we this is where we create that identity view. We identify all this experience as me and mine. And we try to make it stay. Like those pleasant experience, we try to make it stay. And those unpleasantness, we try to make it go away. And actually, the more you try to make it go away, it will stay longer. So that's why this is where we causes us that suffering. And we keep doing that. And we keep doing that. Actually, we are giving fuel for the next existence. You know, the fuel is there. So when the fuel is not there, you know, the, when the fire has no nothing to burn, it's stop, it ceases. So that's why we keep, you know, we manifest that. So because we don't see that this doesn't belong to us, we don't own this. You know, but because we misinterpret that this is like, you know, I'm on this. So we try to manipulate, we try to control, we try to manufacture, we try to create, you know, that we are the one who create that, you know. Here, because an untouched ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and unskilled and undisciplined in the Dharma, who has no regard for the true man and is unskilled and undisciplined in the Dharma, regards material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. He regards feeling as self, perception as self, mental formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how identity views comes to. This is how we identify all this, as we think that we own that. So for example, when we experience whatever we experience, we tend to identify with that. For example, when we got agitated, I remember someone said to me that I'm so agitated, I will be agitated for the rest of my whole week. So, and I told this person, I said, you know, the most agitated person in the world still have a moment they're not agitated. Because sometimes how we identify, and then she already project into the future that I will feel like this. This moment, because I feel agitated, so because of she's going on retreat, so I said, I wish this person, and we have a visiting a guest stay in the monastery, then going for a retreat. So I said, oh, wish you, you know, well, you know, having a good retreat. So I don't think I'll be having good retreat. I'm so agitated right now. So my whole retreat, I'll be very agitated. This is how we project, isn't it? Just because how we feel now, we project in the future. So we think that we own the agitation. We can take that with us, you know. And then, you know, this is how we project into the future. That's, I will feel this way. So I told her, no. I said, this is how, like for example, sometimes we identify ourselves with that. And then we think that we have to live up to that. You know, like for example, like sometimes people depressed, then they think that I'm depressed. Then I should depress, you know, like for the rest of my life because I am depressed. If I'm not depressed, I'm no longer me. You know, this is how we started to identify ourselves with those experiences. This is how the identity views comes into. So then he stopped up. Then, but Venerable Sir, how does identity views not come to be? Here, because a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in the Dharma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in the Dharma, does not regard material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. He does not regard feelings as self, perception as self, mental formation as self, and consciousness as self, or self as process of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how identity views does not come to be. So the noble one, those and the enlightenment, they will not add on. You know, they just like one of the, they see, you know, seeing is just seeing. But for us, seeing, we add on so much, isn't it? But when they hear something, and then this is how feelings arises, and we start to think about it, and then we have a whole lot of story about how we feel, isn't it? But actually, it's just because the feelings come and go. It just, you know, arises, it just pass away. It won't stay. But actually, we are the one who keep, you know, reinforce that feelings. Actually, we tend to intensify whatever we feel, and we make it even stay longer sometimes. And then we try so hard to try to get rid of it, especially the feelings that we don't like. But I can guarantee you, you will stay, if you stay even longer, if you leave it alone, it will just come and go. So that's why he said, if those enlightened ones, they will not identify whatever they experience as this is me and this is belongs to me and this is my feelings, this is my emotion. So what when a person is the gratification, what is the danger and what is the escape in the case of material form? What is the gratification? What is the danger and what is the escape in the case of feelings, in the case of perception, in the case of formation, in the case of consciousness? So he said, what is the danger? So they said, the gratifications. Because when we see that this is the danger, then that is how we be able to, he said, what is the escape from this? When we see that and how we escape from that, you know, to lock into this identity wheel. So he said the pleasure and joy, because it arises in dependent on material form. This is where when we have, you know, when we have this joy and have the pleasure and joy that arises independent on feelings, independence of perception, independent of mental formations, independent of consciousness. This is the gratifications in the case of consciousness. So the consciousness is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. And this is the danger in the case of consciousness. The removal of desire, lust, and abandonment of desires and lust for consciousness. This is the escape in the case of consciousness. That means the remover of the desires, because the desire is the cause, is the source of that giving fuel to these five aggregates that keep it going. So we have to, because of the desire itself, the desires because come off the, when the pleasure, the joy, you know, that arises in dependence on material form, and we have the senses, you know, and then the pleasure, you know, the feelings that we like, the joy, then that is where we get hooked. So normally we get hooked when that is the feeling arises, and oh, you know, we like this, and then we want more and more. So the only way that we can escape is not to get hooked into that. You know, the moment that feelings arises, you know, yeah, it's pleasant, it's just being pleasant. And it's pleasant, okay, we just make the most of it, but not thinking that how to get this again in the future. This is how what we do, isn't it? When pleasant feelings arises and we want more. And then we started to think, isn't it? How am I going to get this again? How am I going to have this feeling again? And then we try so hard, we try to manufacture, we try to create that. And any unpleasant feelings, we say, oh, this, I don't like these feelings, you know, this is not, this is terrible. Then we think all sorts of ways to avoid. So for example, when we have contact and maybe someone that said nasty things to us and we have terrible feelings, you know, it's just unpleasant, it's terrible. And then it's because of that person said that, you know, then next time we already have that, you know, that in our mind, because we're thinking of this person giving me that these unpleasant feelings. Then next time we start to have that dislike of this person, or we try to avoid. I'm not saying this person, because this person give me suffering, this person give me unpleasant feelings. But actually, the person just says, it's just words, it's just sound. But for us, we make up a lot of stories that, okay, we, you know, and this person causes me suffering. And we think that our suffering is come from the other person. And the other way around, if it's someone that we like, maybe someone so sweet, you know, that praises, we are so good, and we are so happy, and we really like that person, then we think that our source of happiness comes from that person. You know, this is how we start to identify. We think that our happiness is come from there. And that is then we crave for more. And then maybe we look forward, we want to see this person. They say sometimes we think that we love that person is the source of our happiness. Actually, it's just that how that person makes us feel. It's not that our source of happiness come from the other person. or our anger, our sufferings come from the other person. It's just how the person makes us feel this way. You know, then this is how we, whole lot of it, we try to eat, like craving to be and craving not to be is still crave. Then we crave for not seeing this person. Or we crave, we look forward, oh, this person, we want to see this person. Because each time I see this person, make me so happy. I'm so happy with this person. Or, you know, like, or certain situation, and we look forward to that, isn't it? And something that is really that unpleasant, we try to avoid. We think all sorts of ways to how to avoid. But sometimes you cannot avoid, isn't it? No matter how hard you try. Then this is how we create so much suffering. If a noble one just recognize that, you know, that like the noble one have only one arrow. But like the Buddha said, the foolish one have two arrows. You know, the noble one, they're struck by an arrow. They just know that, oh, it's pain. That's all. Yeah, it's not pleasing to their ears. This is what, but this person said, and they stop. That's it. They don't go further. But because of the desires, the craving, the one thing, we create whole lots of that. You know, then the Buddha said that the foolish one will pick up another arrow and poke themselves a few more times. This is how we add on suffering. This is how it's all this when we identify experience and we try to crave that, we work so hard because of the craving, you know, because of the desires, we want all this and we try so hard to crave that, try to manifest that. And that's the add on suffering we have. But if the noble one, okay, this is how feeling is just feeling. This is how you feel. It's just, you know, when someone said nasty thing to us, it's just not pleasing to the ears, that's all. And then they stop, isn't it? They don't go further. But the foolish one will go on and on. Go on and on. They can write a book about this person, about these feelings, you know. And this is how the add-on suffering, the second arrow, so they add on that is unnecessarily. So the pleasure and joy that arises independent on feelings, independence on perception, independence on formation, independence on consciousness. This is the gratification in the case of consciousness. The consciousness is impermanent, suffering, subject to change. This is the danger in the case of consciousness. The removal of desires and lust, the abandonment of desires and lust for consciousness. This is the escape in the case of consciousness. So only that is the abandonment, the removal of the desires, because the desire is the cause. The cause for all the five aggregates. And this is, and then the removal of that is the escape in the case. So once we remove the desires, that is the escape. Rambasa, how does one know, how does one see that in regard to this body with its consciousness and all external signs, there is no I-making, mind-making, and underlying tendency to conceit? There's the three conceit, I'm better, I'm the same, I'm worse. So, because of this is how... So this is how we start to have, because we identify this as me, this is the I making. And so when the Buddha talk about the when the Buddha talk about non-self, it's not that you are not there. It's just that we try to make all this experience, all this, you know, as me, and we try to own it, we try to make it stay, we try to make it stay permanently. But it's impermanent. It keep changing, but we try to make it stay. We try to make it the way we want it to be. We try to manipulate. We want this way, we want that way, but we can't control. It goes its own way, whether we like it or not. Like we attach to our body, we think this body belongs to us, and then people try so hard, you know, go for plastic surgery, maybe they can stay, you know, they look young, you know. But even though from the outside you look young, but inside all your part is still old, isn't it? You can't, you know? But this is how we have this
so much suffering, we think that we can control. We think that we can make it stay. Look beautiful, look young and healthy forever, will not die. You know, that's why the other day I said, you know, the Dhamma talk, you know, I said, you know, we all, on theoretically level, we all understand, okay, yeah, one day we die. We will keep saying that we will die, we will face that. But how many of us truly think that we will die, isn't it? You know, it's so difficult. We think that we can stay, you know, stay on. We can stay forever. Even though, yeah, on the theoretically level, yes, we think we know. But really, when it hits home, it's still very difficult to accept that, isn't it? To recognize that I'm going to die, you know? It's so difficult. We think that this body, we try so hard to keep the body look young, and then we exercise, you know, so that our body becomes strong, you know? So no matter how hard you try, the body still gets sick, you still die, you get old. So that's what you cannot control. So this is how we... The eye making, the mind making, so we try to make our body, you know, and this is how we, the sense of self, the eye making, mind making, this is my body, this is mine, you know, and this is how we identify ourselves, even with the person around us, my family, everything, me and mine, it belongs to me. And that is where, that is the we create that, but actually, we can't, you know, we cannot control. Because any kind of material form, whatever, whether past or present, I think a future as well, because I think that that is input future. So whether past, present or future, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, one sees a material form as it actually is, with proper wisdom, thus, this is not mine. This I'm not. This is not myself. Any kind of feeling, whatever, any kind of perceptions, whatever, any kind of mental formations, whatever, any kind of consciousness, whatever, one sees all consciousness as it actually is, with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. This I'm not. This is not myself. It is when one knows and sees, thus, that in regard to this body with its consciousness and all external signs, there is no eye making, mind making, or underlying tendency to conceit. So that's that once you see that, you know, that is with wisdom, that means that is the wisdom that is without that hindrances. So when your mind, that's why sometimes when in the after jhana stage, and this is where you be able to, because without the five hindrances, when your five hindrances is not temporarily, it's not that permanently removed, but temporarily not there. So then the perception that what we perceive, actually, we be able to perceive what things actually is. Because we have the clarity, because the mind really completely still. So, because the absence of the five hindrances. So, as long as the five hindrances is there, what we perceive cannot be trusted. Only when the five hindrances is not there, then the perception actually can be trusted. So, that's why it's because of the five hindrances is there, so the mind is not still. So it's that hindrance, the mind, it's just like the mind is just being clouded. It's just, you know, it's like the mind having very foggy, not have no clarity. We can't see it. We cannot perceive things as it truly is. So when we attain the state that, you know, in the after the jhana state, when the mind that really, you know, that is temporarily five hindrances absent, then that is where we start to contemplate. You know, that's why sometimes, because you can't contemplate anywhere when you're in jhana, because it's all still, you know, but after jhana, that's because that is the clarity. So your what you perceive, actually that perception is you are really perceiving things as it truly is. Then in the mind of a certain people, this thought arose. So it seems material form is not self, feeling is not self, perception is not self, formations are not self, consciousness are not self. What self then? The actions done by non-self effect. Then you say, this is non-self. So whatever, you know, unwholesome things, you know, whatever unwholesome things we done, oh, it doesn't affect us because non-self is not there, you know. But if, whether we believe that is a rebirth or not, right now in this birth, whatever we do in this life, if we've done something unwholesome, how do we feel? We all know, isn't it? We suffer, you know. Then it's because people tend to say that, oh, you know, since it's no self, then no one there is to suffer. Then he said non-self, it doesn't mean that no one there. It's just that because we make it, we think that it's a self, we think that it's permanently there, but things is forever changing. So it's not that no one there to experience this, no one, you see, the other day we have a question, like, you know, since, you know, since that it's not yourself, they say, how can you be authentic and unique if this is not yourself? So that means the question is still that is a self, you know. So actually, that when the Buddha said non-self, it's not that you are not here. It's not that we are no one here to experience that, you know. That is just that we take it as a self because we think that this will not change. But it's forever changing. So of course, you know, if we do something unwholesome, and we know, isn't it? If we sometimes, you know, we suffer. If we harm someone, how do we feel? You know, whether we believe that it's, you know, rebirth or next life, but in this very life we suffer, isn't it? We do any unwholesome deeds. How do we feel? Of course we feel suffer, but some people said that, oh yeah, non-self, then no one there to get affected, isn't it? Then the Blessed One, knowing in his mind, the thoughts in the mind of that bhikkhu, addressed the bhikkhu thus. It is possible, bhikkhus, as some misguided man here, obtuse and ignorant with his mind, dominating by craving, might think that he can outstrip the teacher's dispensation. Thus, so it seems material form is not self, consciousness is not self. What self then? Were action done by non-self effect? Now, bhikkhus, you have been trained by me through interrogations on various occasions in regard to various things. Because what do you think? Is material form permanent? That's why he tried to explain that he asked the question. So, is it material form permanent or impermanent? So, impermanence, remember, sir, is impermanent suffering or happiness? Is that suffering, remember, sir? So, is what impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded? Thus, this is mine, this I am, this is myself, no one but sir. So since this is suffering, it's non-self, it's subject to change. Is it this is me, this is mine? He said, no, this is not, this is no self, this is not myself. What do you think? Is feelings, perception, mental formations, consciousness, permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, remember, sir. So what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, remember, sir. What is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded? This is mine. This I am. This is myself. No, remember, sir. Therefore, because any kind of material form, whatever, whether past, future, or present, all material forms should be seen as actually with its proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Any kind of feelings, whatever, any kind of perceptions, whatever, any kind of mental formation, whatever, any kind of consciousness, whatever, all consciousness should be seen as actually is with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Seeing thus, a well-taught noble disciple becomes enchanted with material form like revulsion. With material form, so revulsion with feelings, revulsion with perception, revulsion with mental formation, revulsion with consciousness. This is nibbida. This is this. Have to be careful. I see many people that think that, oh yeah, I'm no longer, I don't want to be reborn, I don't want to be reborn again, I want to get enlightened this life. And that they think that they are not, actually it's not come from the wisdom that you're turning over, because you're no longer passionate, you no longer have passion, you know, that because all this is come and go, come and go. And when you be able to really see that and you perceive things as it truly is, then you already have no interest. Like the nibbita, you turn away. So it's, but a lot of people, you know, that think that craving not to be is nibbita. I have a friend. It's a very good friend that you used to practice together. So, and then she's be able to She remember her previous life. So then she said, I don't want to be reborn again. So then she tried so hard. She will practice, she will do walking meditation. She will not, she get up very early. She don't want to rest. And she has slot and topper. She will hit her head on the wall so that she keep awake, you know. Trying very hard because she don't want to be reborn. And she tried so hard to a point that she got very sick. She got like, terrible headache because she using willpower a lot, so I could push her a lot, and because she keeps saying that I don't want to be reborn, and that is craving not to be. It's still crave, you know, crave not to be, you know. Then it's not nibbida. And some people have so much anger towards the world. Oh, terrible, the world is hell, you know. It's not that. It's not that you have lots of anger towards them. That is not nibbita. Nibbita is that you're no longer interested. Because you see this is all, you know, it's all things won't stay and it causes you suffering. And we see that we turn away. So we no longer feeding you, we no longer putting in more fuel and keep the fire going. We stop viewing it. We turn away from that. But and then she got so sick until she cannot meditate. She get so sick that she have to rest for a long time. And because she said that I want to get enlightened this life. I don't want to be reborn. I don't want. Don't want means craving not to be. That's why some people think, oh yeah, it's very common. People used to tell me, oh, I don't want to be reborn. I don't want to have next life. Hey, not up to you, you know. Isn't it? You don't want, you know. You know, sometimes that you're not there yet, you know. Like, a lot of people think that this is nibbita, you know, telling me that they don't want, you know. It's not truly. Nibbita is that you have the wisdom. You be able to see that because you be able to perceive things as they truly is. That is the then you are the turning away. You have no more passion, you know, towards that. You have not interested at all. Don't want to have an, you know, is that. Then you turn away. That is a nibbita. It's not craving not to be. So a lot of people think that, oh, I'm nibbita because I don't want to be reborn. But actually, yeah, you're just craving not to be. You know, it's still crave. So it's still not yet, you know. So it's not easy to be able to come to the point that the nibbita that you turn away, that you need to have the wisdom. It's not the small wisdom. You have to have the big wisdom. That the mind that is so pure, that mind that absent of the five hindrances, that you be able to perceive things as they truly is. Then only you be able to turn away. Then things will fade away. So without that big wisdom, you can't. You know. So sometimes because of we people experience a lot of suffering, they just don't like the suffering. They said that then they will say, I don't want to be reborn. And then when things goes well, then they have forgotten. And they will continue, isn't it? Isn't it that time? When they have lots of suffering, oh, I don't want to be reborn, oh, terrible. And then when after a while, we forgot, you know. And things goes on, you know, smooth, good, happy, and then have forgotten. So that's why it's not easy to come to that stage, that nibbita, that turn away. You really have to have the big wisdom in order to that. So, being disenchanted, there's a revulsion. He becomes dispassionate. So that's why it's viraga. Through this passion, his mind is liberated. We are free. So we no longer holding on, you know, to that, you know, and then that we are free, liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands birth is destroyed. Holy life has been lived and had to be done. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. So this is next birth has been destroyed. So no more, the fuel is stopped. No more fuel. Because when you see this thing as it truly is, we no longer putting in fuel anymore. When there is no more fuel, nothing to burn. So everything ceases. So that is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Now, while this discourse was being spoken, through not clinging the minds of 60 bhikkhus were liberated from the taints. Because these questions was being asked by the master of these 60 monks, and he's already got enlightened. So, but he asked on behalf of his 60 monks. So then the 60 monks, after listening to this discourse, and they got enlightened. So, any questions or comments? Yes.
What's the difference between informations and perception?
Oh, because the you come with the perception, because when the feelings arises, and then that because our perception is based on our feelings, we perverted by likes and dislikes. The mental formation actually is the view, the view, the doer, you know. Then we start the thoughts, you know, the thoughts with intention. That okay, you know, because of, this is how we perceive that this is really bad. Okay, you start to think, how am I going to avoid that in the future? That is a mental formation. Oh, go on and on and on. That is all the will that try to manipulate, try to measure, try to control. That's doer. The consciousness is the knower. So is that answer your question?
Okay. Thank you.
More questions or comments? Yes.
I just want to know if you know, we're born, we're given an identity, mm-hmm. we're taught a sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So as a normal human being, we go through life with goals. With all, how do you, I don't know how you rid yourself of. To me, it would be easier to live in a monastery or on a mountaintop and meditate all day long, away from people, away from a job, all that. Mm-hmm. It's easier to me, mm-hmm. I think. But when we're operating in the real world every day, how do we get rid of this sense of who we are and self and give that up?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think there's one way that you can learn and you can apply it in your daily life, and that is you try to stay present. Live in present moment awareness, because very easily we get sucked in into this whole lot of things go on, and actually keep bringing your mind back to present moment awareness. Whatever we do, sometimes we think that we some people say, oh, I'm out there, I need to work, I need to plan, how can I live present moment? No, you can plan, you can work. Because how many of us, when you're doing what you're doing now, do you really fully here? No, isn't it? Sometimes we might be doing, you know, washing, and then our mind might be thinking somewhere. Maybe we might have traveled to Siberia, but we are here, you know. So that's why if you be able to do that, apply that in your daily life, that is, you know, then you have more clarity, and then you learn to make peace with every situation. So bring your mind. It sounds easy, it's not easy. Present moment, to be able to be present is not easy. But even though it's not easy, it's possible. Is it possible? Because as you started to practice, you can see that your wholesome state of mind increased.
unwholesome state of mind decrease, then you can see that you have lessened your suffering, that you started to gain confidence and faith in the practice. Then you have to keep practicing. And it's not overnight. It's just like anything you need to practice. You know, like, if, for example, like world champion, Olympic champion, you know, they're only the, you know, like they run for how many seconds? They practice for the, you know, how many years they practice for that for the, you know, for the runner, for the few seconds, isn't it? For the 1 minute, few seconds, they train for how many years? This is how it need to train. We have to train, keep training, you know. So that actually, as we have has more and more clarity, actually, we truly lessen our suffering. It will not go away immediately because it's need train. It's a gradual training, the Buddha said. So you have to keep doing that. So, and that's why sometimes we have to, you know, not everybody be able to. Even some people, you know, even some people, they have the opportunities to ordain, but they may not be able to live the monastic life if you are not really ready, not mature enough. You know, even you live that life, people are so disrupt. So it's okay. Buddha never said that you have to become a nun to practice Buddhism. No. So we have someone wanted to become a nun, and then of course, and then the family will say that, oh no, you know, they're quite not happy that, and then they keep asking, is it, you have to become a nun? He said, you don't have to either, you know. So because the family keep thinking that to practice Buddhism has to become a nun, then he told the person, no, you don't have to, you know. It's just that people choice, you make your choice that you want to live this life, but you don't have to become a nun, you know. Even some people not ready, even they come to this life, to live this life, you know, they still disrobe, you know. Sometimes, like, you know, theoretically understanding is one thing, but when you're ready, or your mind, you know, because to be able to live this life, you have to be really to a certain extent that you be able to really let go quite a bit of things, you know, the outside things. Because we cannot sit on two chairs, one leg inside there, one leg still interested, you know, in the things outside. You can't. You have to truly have to let go to a certain extent. Then only you'll be able to live in this life. So just keep practicing. Bring your mind back to present moment awareness.
But we're still keeping our own identity, which I think I heard you say we need to get rid of.
You can't get rid of that. You cannot get rid. It's only through practicing that, because only through when you're seeing it, not in theoretically we think that we know, but actually deep down we haven't seen that. Because we still have the five hindrances. It's not being removed. It's there. So what we perceive is still not, we're not perceiving things as there truly is. So that's why you need to practice to the level that you have that purity, that the absence of the five hindrances, to be able to perceive things as there truly is. Then only you have the turning away. Before you reach that, of course, you know, it's a gradual training. It's okay. You know, of course you still have sense of self. It's fine. Even the once returner still has sense of self, you know. You know, like stream winners, they still, you know, Sotapanna, they still have the first stage of enlightenment. They only abandon the identity views, you know. And they still have anger, but it's not the gross type of anger. The sense of self is still there. But of course, it's more, the defilements is more on a more subtle level. So it's a gradual training. Of course, sometimes, you know, like even mindfulness is at a different level of mindfulness. Like the Arahant mindfulness is, they have a constant mindfulness, they're more aware of that. They don't get locked in, they don't get, you know, that because the mindfulness is constant. So because of that, they already uprooted the five hindrances permanently. So that's why the mindfulness, they don't get caught, they lock into that. You know, they won't. But for us, sometimes we can see ourselves, isn't it? When then, sometimes our mindfulness is like that. Sometimes when our mindfulness is, for example, when we have strong mindfulness, the moment that unwholesome thoughts arises, we can easily stop, isn't it? It's just stop very easily. But the moment you see it, stop. Because that time your mindfulness is sharp enough. But we are not, you know, sometimes yeah, it's okay, sometimes not. It's just like all the champion, the world champion, they have to, you know, they have to train until they all the time they can do it, you know. They cannot say, oh, sometimes 10, that is not safer, you know. You know, sometimes they can, like those that divers, you know, how they, sometimes, oh, they can, perfectly, they can do the turn, you know, sometimes they can't do it, that is no good. They have to train until the point that each time, you know, most of, the, you know, they'll be able to do that, you know. So that's like, we all have mindfulness, it's just on different level. So it's okay, because we have to start at somewhere, at any level. You know, of course, you know, we still come with sense of self, but at least, you know, we know that this is something that we need to work on. We know that this is causes of suffering. So, and then as we develop, you know, as we start to practice, and if we can see, like for example, things that used to bother us for a long time, maybe for a month, maybe now it's only 2 weeks, you know, then actually we already lessen our suffering for two weeks, isn't it? We already lessen suffering so much, you know, but if we used to suffer for so long, you know, then it's already lessened. So it's a gradual training. It's still there. It won't go away immediately. I give you the simile. It's just like when we react to that, when we're giving the fuel, so the fire will keep burning. When we stop reacting, the fire is still there because you still have fuel there. So each time we don't feed, we don't react, you know, we don't lock in to that defilement, we don't react to defilement, we are not acting more fuel. But the fire is still there. So until we keep doing that, and when the fuel, when it's finished, so nothing to burn, then it stops. And also, it's just like a ball, you know. If we kick it, we put in energy. It's raw. It keeps spinning. When even we stop kicking, it still spins because the energy is still there. But if we continually not putting in new energy, the ball will eventually stop by itself. This is how the practice. We cannot use willpower. We cannot get rid of it. We can't do that. We have to keep practicing, keep not feeding it, not putting in more fuel. But of course, it's still there. It's not. It won't go away immediately. So, is it answer your question?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Ajahn Hasapana, how would you compare no self with emptiness? And also the bliss of emptiness.
It's just that moment, because of absence of the intrinsics, then that is to have the bliss. Because of all these things that, you know, we talk about the five aggregate system, you know, that actually that causes the suffering, because we tend to identify, say, this is me, this is mine. And how, just now I already explained how sometimes that when we have unpleasant, we try to avoid, and all this, we create also, and then anger, when we can't get what we want, we think that this is me, this is belongs to me, you know, and you know, on and on. So when your five hindrances is not there, when your mind absent of the five hindrances, that is, so your mind, you know, that is free of that. So you have the bliss. Because sometimes we don't see that this is suffering. We like to, we think that's me, we want to hold on to that, we can't let it go. Because of we think that it's difficult, unless you reach that stage, you see that it's actually it's so nice. Without the body, it's so nice. But sometimes we're so scared to the body disappears. Even it's quite common thing, like people before they enter into jhana, when the body disappears, they're so scared. Oh, I'm disappeared. They're so scared because they're so scared to disappear. You know, we just hold on to that. But once you experience, oh, the body, we thought the body is so nice. You know. Okay, so that's the question. Okay. Kami from Poland. How can I deal with hateful, harmful neighbors using teaching of the suttas today? It's just like, the Buddha said, live happily, not hating those who hate you. They can hate you, it's fine. Isn't it? It's their business. So next time, tell yourself, none of my business. They hate me, it's their business. They hate me, I don't have to hate them. Isn't it? It's up to them. Because we don't have to be responsible for that person's action. You know, that this is how, because this is where, because we take it to, because, for example, this is how our identity builds. If someone said that we're terrible, we are bad, or whatever, then we said, because how we perceive, how we see ourselves, I'm such a good person, don't you think, don't you know that I'm such a good person? Now you say that I'm horrible, you know. And this is where that we cling on to the identity view that people are suffering, isn't it? It's okay, whatever the person said. It's that person's business. The person can say what they like, you know. So that's why the Buddha said, not hating those who hate you. They hate us, is fine. But for us, normally most people say, because you hate me, then if you hate me, if you hate me once, I hate you twice. You know, you hate me twice, I hate you thrice. More times, you know, 10 more times I hate you. No, it's okay, whatever. You cannot control, you know. And because why we get angry, why we get upset? Because of the sense of self. Because who we think, you know, we all have the image, you know, how we think, how we view ourselves, who we think we are. And then when someone said that not who we are, then we got upset because our sense of self being challenged. So we need to defend our sense of self because I'm not like that. You know, I remember the neighbor, the two brothers is not in good terms. So then the other brother come, the wife come, they will say, oh, I'm the good Cain. So the other brother is a bad Cain, so I'm a good Cain. So this is how we identify ourselves as good. And someone said that we are bad. So we have to defend, isn't it? And because of this identity view, who we think we are. So we have to defend ourselves, isn't it? Because someone said that we're such a horrible person, but we think we are such a sweet, nice person. So that's why it's okay. Whatever people said that. So, Chloe from Singapore, how do we distinguish between non-self and impermanent? There is a self that you can control, you can make it stay. Permanently, you can make your feelings, okay, now I like this feeling, it's pleasant, I want them to stay forever. Non-self, because it's non-self, because it's impermanent, we cannot make things stay. Emily from Germany, regarding the Sutta text, this is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself. Why do I have to live if I do not really exist? What is left of the existence of me in the matter? Am I just illusion? It's not that you are not exist. Again, we identify all this experience as me. And those experiences come and go. We cannot make them stay. We cannot make them stay. We cannot manipulate. We cannot control what you want the body to be, not to get old, you know. It's not that we are not exist, we are here. It's real. What our feeling is real. It's not illusion. Sometimes it's very difficult to really explain that. It's not that we are not exist, we are here. It's just that we have, like, just now we already explained the identity view, isn't it? Like someone said that, oh, you're terrible, you're worse, then we have to defend that. That
That is how we create that. It's not that we are not exist, we are here. What we see, what we experience is real. It's real. But how we create that suffering for ourselves. So if it's just okay, we make peace with every single moment, every situation we're in, okay, you know, this is how we feel. If this moment we feel depressed, okay, we let the depressed come and depressed go. Isn't it? And this is how we feel. And then things come and go, and you just stay there. Accept whatever experiencing. So it's just, if you have pleasant feelings, so we make the most of it. If I'm pleasant, you just let it be. It still will go away. But the problem, we try to manipulate. We try to control. We try to manifest. That's the suffering. That is the second arrow. That's the suffering. The Buddha said the second arrow. It's not that we are not exist. Okay. I know this is... because we exist. We are here. It's real. Our feelings is real. Okay.
What do you think about hoax? These days, so many things, hoax, fake news everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So if the person get hoax from somebody else,
uh-huh,
which they know it's not true,
uh-huh,
but they don't care, mm-hmm, because they say people can think whatever they think, people can say whatever they, mm-hmm, say, but the hoax, the false news, the fake news people spread, mm-hmm, affect the community, affect, mm-hmm, the life of other people, then don't you think we need to take a step to correct what is not right?
Yes. And that's why sometimes the problem with freedom of speech, sometimes people, it doesn't mean that when the Buddha talk about right speech, the Buddha never talk about right silence. So if you need to speak up, you need to speak up. But they have to fulfill the five conditions. It's true. It is kind. So it's not out, you know, it's the right time, right place, you know, and it's not come from, is it beneficial? If it's not beneficial, it's no point that we you know, it has to be beneficial. And the way we said it has to be, you know, pleasing to the ears, you know, some is the words that we choose have to be a gentle words, you know, it's right speech. So doesn't mean that, you know, like freedom of speech and then we say anything we like that harm someone. But doesn't mean that we have to keep quiet, you know. That we've been bullied or being, you know, then we need to speak up, we speak up. But right speech, you know, fulfill the five conditions, not right silence. Okay.
Thank you. One more question.
Okay.
About the present that you say to in order to be able to to have this sense of non-self,
uh-huh,
or less desire,
uh-huh,
we stay in the present moment.
Uh-huh.
What is actually the best effective way to stay present? Because on Friday night I come here, meditate,
uh-huh,
I couldn't stop my mind, uh-huh, like, you know, I'm here, but my mind in Siberia, like you say.
Uh-huh.
It's an everyday life. Back from here, 15 minutes, I remember, I say, stay present. But 1 week later, before another Friday night, I already forgotten the whole thing. How do we, like, do this on daily basis?
Yeah, actually, sometimes you can, firstly, you learn to slow down a little bit. Because sometimes if you keep, you know, sometimes you have to slow down a bit, because if not, if we keep follow our usual habitual pattern, we rush from one thing to another, we keep rushing from one thing. So actually, first thing, you try to, maybe you get that a little bit earlier. So try to slow down, not to rush from one thing to another. So sit down properly to try to have your breakfast, you know, slow it down. So, and then a small little thing in your daily life, you can use this to practice. For example, when you get up first thing in the morning, so you have to remember when you walk out the room, you make sure you stop. That gives you a break. Because we are habitual.
we keep rushing from one thing to another. We can't stop. So now the first thing you have to learn to slow down. So just stop. Then deliberately, you know, that you slow down, you just slowly put your hand onto the handle, you open and you open and you go out, you close it back. So using daily life closing open door, get more consciously aware of when you're opening and closing the door, and you go to your bathroom, if you start to brush your teeth, just more aware of, you know, you brush your teeth, how you feel, you know, try to do that. When eating, try to be more aware that the sensation, the feelings, that how you chew your food, that is help. So it seems that it's small. It's just like the Buddha said, each drops, you know. You know, sometimes a bucket, each time it's one small drop, is drip, drip, drip. But after whole day, you have a bucket of water. And this can help. So start with something small and not forcing yourself, try to be present. Like try to slow down first. First of all, slow down. And all small little things, try to be more consciously aware of what you do. Like when you go out, when open the door, enter into another. So making one of the exercise that whenever you enter or go out from one room to another, make sure that you're more aware of that opening of the door, you know, handle. Because sometimes we just open and we go in. You know what I mean? It helps you to slow. You have to slow down first, you know. And all small little things. When you eat, sit down and slow down and eat. So if you're able to do that, it will help you. Not underestimate all those small things, you know, in life, you know. So wherever last time we told off, you know, we go into a room, have to be completely no sound, no noise, have to go so slowly, sit down, we close the door, have to be really no noise at all, no sound at all, that we really close it. But I find it's good, you know. So make sure that maybe one of your homework, you go back at next time whenever I close my door, make sure that make no noise, no sound at all. Just quietly open, go out and slowly close. You can. So if you do that, actually that is how you train. It takes a bit of time to train. It will not happen overnight. If it happened overnight, we all got enlightened.
Thank you. Okay.
So any more questions or comments? Yes?
I'm just not quite sure what you're referring to, Venerable. When answering that question from Germany, you said it's not that we're not here. So if it's not that we're not here, it means there's something here, but when you look at it, there's only the five khandhas. You can't really identify anything in the five khandhas for something to be here. Could you explain that?
Because all these things cannot exist by themselves, they have the interdependence on each other. So like, for example, a car, you cannot put it apart. You cannot say, oh, this is car, you give people two tires, this is car, you know. So that's like, and because we do have the body, the rupa is here, and we have the contact, we have the feelings, you know. So, but because all these things is come and go, you know, all the, but we identify, like for example, the body itself is impermanent, it's non-self. But we identify this as self. But it doesn't mean that we don't have body. We have body, we have feelings. We have it. You know? It's not that it's not there. But because of the suffering that how we created, that is that we take this body as me. We try to control. We think we try to beautify. Okay, we want our body. We want ourselves not to grow old, to look young, to look nice. You know, then all the controlling, all the manipulating. We try to do so much that because we create the identity of who we are, and we try to live up to that identity. That is that identity that we try to create that self. That is the suffering. It's not that we are not here. We have here. We are here. We are the body. We feel. But this is what that the add on the suffering, that how we identify all the experience as me and mine. Because that come and go, we cannot make it stay. We cannot say, oh, may our body not to grow old, but it's grow impermanent. And even our desires also change all the time, isn't it? One moment we want this, another moment we want another thing. You know what I mean? So everything keeps changing. But we want it to be, we want it to stay, because we try to control. That's the path. That's why the Buddha said that is non-self. But we think that this is self. We try to make it stay as it is, everything, according to our plan, according to our expectation, according to how we identify ourselves, what identity we have, or we have a kind, sweet person, nice person. If someone said that we're horrible, we're bad, we have to defend ourselves. So we becomes offended, we get so offended, isn't it? So we have to protect ourselves. So because our sense of self being challenged, this self, that so-called good, sweet, nice person being challenged, the sense of self being challenged. Is it answer what you
ask? Thank you.
Okay. Okay, any more questions or comments? Okay. So,